The OA One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Katie Weaver and Faith Perlow. Later, John Russell presents a new everyday grammar report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of William Howard Taft. But first,
a woman in the American state of Nebraska has been charged this week with helping her daughter end her pregnancy. The charges came after investigators got Facebook messages in which the two discussed using medication to end the pregnancy at about 24 weeks. The prosecutor said it is the first time he has charged anyone for illegally ending a pregnancy after 20 weeks, a restriction Nebraska established in 2010. In June, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Before that, American states were not permitted to enforce abortion bans until about 24 weeks. An abortion is any medical operation to end a pregnancy. Meta, which owns Facebook, said Tuesday that Nebraska law enforcement ordered it to surrender records connected to the case on June 7th. That was more than 2 weeks before the Supreme Court decision. The orders, the company added, did not mention abortion at all. It said the orders concerned a police investigation of the case of a stillborn baby who was burned and buried. In early June, the mother and daughter were charged with removing a body, hiding the death of a person, and false reporting. After investigators examined the private Facebook messages a month later, government lawyers added abortion-related charges against the mother. Lawyers representing the mother and daughter have not answered media requests for comment. The case, however, has renewed concerns about data privacy in the United States. Even before the U.S. Supreme Court decision in June, technology companies have faced increasing calls to protect the personal data that they collect from users. Many fear that law enforcement or activists could use the data, including messages, search histories, and locations, against people seeking abortions or those who try to help them. Until this past May, anyone could buy mobile phone data of people at more than 600 Planned Parenthood sites around the country for as little as $160. A recent investigation by Vice Media said the information included where the phones sleep at night, time spent at the health center, and places people visited before and afterward. In June, Democratic lawmakers asked federal agencies to investigate Apple and Google for enabling the collection and sale of their data to third parties. The following month, Google announced it will automatically remove information about users who visit abortion centers or places that could bring legal problems following the Supreme Court decision. Privacy rights supporters say that is not enough. In the Nebraska case, for instance, neither Meta nor law enforcement would have been able to read the messages had they been encrypted the way messages on Meta's WhatsApp service are protected by default. Meta must flip the switch and make end-to-end encryption a default in all private messages, including on Facebook and Instagram. Doing so will literally save pregnant people's lives, said Caitlin Seeley George. She leads the nonprofit rights group Fight for the Future. Governments and law enforcement can use court orders to force tech companies to surrender users' data. But technology companies have said little about cooperating with law enforcement or government agencies trying to prosecute people seeking an abortion where it is illegal. Meta, for example, pointed to its online transparency report, which says we comply with government requests for user information only where we have a good faith belief that the law requires us to do so. Abortion rights activists suggest that people in states where abortion is illegal should avoid creating such online data in the first place. They say people should turn off phone location services or just leave their phones at home when seeking reproductive health care. The experts also suggest learning the privacy policies of any health apps in use.
A new study finds climate events such as flooding, heat waves, and drought worsen more than half of the known diseases that infect people. These diseases include malaria, cholera, and anthrax. Researchers examined medical literature of established cases of such diseases. They found out that 218 out of the known 375 human infectious diseases, or 58%, seemed to be made worse by extreme weather connected to climate change. The results appeared this week in the publication Nature Climate Change. The study connected more than 1,000 pathways from climate events to sick people. In some cases, heavy rains and flooding sicken people through disease-carrying mosquitoes, rats, and deer. Other events, like warming oceans and heat waves, spoil seafood, and droughts bring bats carrying viral infections to people. Medical doctors, going back to the days of ancient Greek civilization, have long connected disease to weather. But this study shows how widespread the influence of climate is on human health. If climate is changing, the risk of these diseases are changing, said study co-leader Dr. Jonathan Patz, director of the Global Health Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dr. Carlos Del Rio is an Emory University infectious disease specialist who was not involved in the study. He said, "The findings of this study are terrifying and illustrate well the enormous consequences of climate change on human pathogens." Del Rio said humans need to all work together to prevent disaster from climate change. In addition to looking at infectious diseases, the researchers explored data on all kinds of human sicknesses, including non-infectious conditions like asthma, allergies, and animal bites. They wanted to learn how many sicknesses could connect to climate events in some way. They found a total of 286 unique sicknesses, and 223 of them seemed to be worsened by climate events. The study found 9 of the conditions were reduced by climate events. Camilo Mora, a climate data expert at the University of Hawaii, is a co-leader of the study. He said the study is not about predicting future cases. These are things that have already happened, he noted. One example Maura knows from his own experience. About 5 years ago, Maura's home in rural Colombia was flooded, creating a breeding ground for mosquitoes. Maura contracted chikungunya, a virus spread by mosquito bites. He survived, but he still suffers pain related to the disease. In another case, the remains of a reindeer dead from anthrax were unearthed as the Siberian permafrost melted from warming in 2016. A child touched the dead animal, got anthrax, and an outbreak spread. Dr. Aaron Bernstein is with the Center for Climate, Health, and the Global Environment at Harvard School of Public Health. He and other outside experts said the study is a good warning about climate and health for now and the future. Bernstein added in an email, "But of course, it only reports on what we already know, and what's yet unknown about pathogens may be yet more compelling about how preventing further climate change may prevent future disasters like COVID-19. I'm Katie Weaver.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has been leading his country in action against the Russian invasion. Now, a company in New York City is turning the Eastern European leader into an action figure. Factory is a company in the Brooklyn area of New York City. It is launching an internet campaign on a website called Kickstarter to raise money for the project. In just 2 weeks, Factory has raised over $120,000, with $30,000 raised within the first 3 hours of the campaign. For each action figure sold, $1 will go to Ukraine. The campaign ends this Friday. The original action figure of Zelensky is a 15-centimeter tall model made of clay. It was created by artist Mike Levitt of Seattle in the state of Washington. The action figures produced for the public will be produced in China and made of plastic. They will likely ship by March of 2023. Jason Feinberg is Factory's creative director. He called Zelensky the unlikely hero. He's the perfect leader for this moment. He has this real strength that comes across. But it's humble, and he sort of represents the opposite of everything that we've come to associate with politics. President Zelensky, who is 44 years old, is a former actor. He was elected 3 years ago and promised an end to the conflict in eastern Ukraine with separatists supported by Russia. Zelensky is seen as a smart communicator. He has won international approval for defending his country against the Russian invasion, which started in February of this year. The new Zelensky action figure will join a group that includes Dr. Anthony Fauci, a top infectious disease expert, Pope Francis, and tennis legend Billie Jean King. Other political action figures for sale on Factory include U.S. Presidents Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Donald Trump. The company website, however, says Trump's action figure is sold out. I'm Faith Perlow.
Imagine you are giving a presentation or writing a letter. You have done your research and organized your main points. You have checked your grammar and vocabulary to make sure everything is correct. But something is missing, a final step that is just as important, if not more important. What is it? A check for clarity. Clarity, the quality of being easily understood, will be the subject of today's report. You will learn about the difference between clarity and grammar. You will also learn one of the best ways to check your presentation or writing for clarity. Clarity and grammar are two closely related issues. We can explore the difference between them by making a comparison to metalworking. Imagine you are a skilled metalworker who is making a high-quality tool such as a chef's knife. First, you collect raw materials for the tool. Then, you follow the exact order of actions to put them in high and cool temperatures, and so on, to make a knife. Vocabulary is like the raw materials, such as iron, steel, or other metal mixtures, that go into making the tool. Grammar, putting words together in certain ways, is like putting raw materials together in an exact order to make a knife. Still, to make a high-quality knife, you need polishing and sharpening to make it look beautiful and cut smoothly. In presentation and writing, that is clarity. Remember that statements can be grammatically correct but unclear, and statements that are somewhat clear can become very clear. You can check for clarity in different ways. Start by double-checking sentences that begin with an abstract subject. Abstract subjects do not easily answer the following question: who is doing something? Consider this example, which comes from Nora Bacon's The Well-Crafted Sentence.
The phenomenon of boomerang children, young adults who return to live with their parents after graduating from college, is an occurrence faced by many families today.
The sentence is grammatically correct, but could be clearer. Why? The subject is the phenomenon, as in the phenomenon of boomerang children. This sentence does not have a clear actor, a person or thing that is doing something. Bacon says this sentence is better.
Many families face the phenomenon of boomerang children, young adults who return to live with their parents after graduating from college.
The subject of this sentence is many families. The action is face, meaning to deal with something in a direct way. Let's take some time to work with this idea. Imagine you see or hear the following sentence.
With the growing use of Slack in business situations, the pros and cons of the technology should be considered by the conference's speakers.
How would you change this sentence into something that is polished and clear? Can you identify the subject of the sentence? Do you think a different word or expression would work better in the subject position? At first, you might find it difficult to look back on your work and check for clarity. You might need to make many changes. But that is exactly what expert writers and speakers do. They almost never present or publish something without careful checking. Remember, language is a kind of skill. Skills take time and hard work to develop. But with patience and practice, you, too, can become an expert. I'm John Russell.
Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Howard Taft, who took office in 1909. In some ways, the story of Taft's presidency is also a story about Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Roosevelt had been president for the 8 years before Taft. The two men were friends. Roosevelt was even a mentor to Taft. But the two men were very different. Roosevelt was energetic, both in his physical abilities and in his use of executive power. His vision for the country was progressive. In contrast, Taft was a more conservative, heavy man who fell asleep in meetings and who did not make decisions quickly. In fact, Americans often remember Taft because of his size. His weight changed frequently, but as president, Taft usually weighed about 135 kilograms. One popular story claims that Taft got stuck in a White House bathtub. This story is not true. However, it is true that Taft had a special bathtub made for him. Several men could sit comfortably in it. As president, Taft did continue some of Roosevelt's reforms, but in a more orderly way. He also took some actions that contradicted Roosevelt's wishes. In 4 years, the two men had gone from political allies to competitors for the White House. Taft was another president who was born in the state of Ohio. He grew up in the city of Cincinnati, along with 5 siblings. Taft's father was a well-known lawyer, public official, and diplomat. He was an advisor to President Ulysses Grant. His mother was an intelligent, independent woman who also worked for the public good. The Tafts had high expectations for their son. He became an excellent student who went on to study at Yale and then the University of Cincinnati Law School. Taft sought a career path that he hoped would lead him one day to the U.S. Supreme Court. He worked as a lawyer and then as a judge in Ohio. Along the way, he met Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt helped Taft advance his career as a judge. But one person was not happy about the career move: Taft's wife. Taft had married an intelligent, independent woman named Helen Herron, known as Nellie. She had always wanted to be first lady, and she urged her husband to follow a path toward the White House. In time, Nellie Taft had her wish. In 1900, President William McKinley offered Taft a position in the Philippines. The islands had come under the control of the United States after the Spanish-American War. McKinley wanted Taft to help prepare the Philippines to be ruled by civilians instead of by soldiers. Taft worried he would not like the job. However, he knew that it was a good chance to build a political career. Taft was right about that, but he was wrong about disliking the job. He enjoyed it so much that he turned down 2 offers to return to the U.S. and serve on the Supreme Court. In the Philippines, Taft successfully established courts, schools, a transportation network, and a health care system. Taft did have pejorative views about the people who lived there. He did not think they were yet capable of governing themselves, but he performed his job as Governor General effectively. Taft might have even stayed in the Philippines if it were not for his friend, Theodore Roosevelt. In 1901, Roosevelt became president. He asked Taft to become his Secretary of War. Taft agreed, partly so he could continue to supervise the Philippines. But the job also put him in a position to become president himself. William Taft did not really want to be president, but Theodore Roosevelt and Nellie Taft wanted him to be. During the election of 1908, Taft permitted Roosevelt to do most of the campaigning for him. He spent a lot of time golfing. Taft was the first president to be strongly linked, so to speak, to the sport of golfing. Another word for golf course is links. Yet voters approved of Taft. They likely hoped he would continue the reforms of Roosevelt. He won the election easily. Once in the White House, however, Taft did several things that reversed Roosevelt's positions. First, Taft signed a bill that did not reduce tariffs as much as many progressive activists wanted. Then, Taft removed one of Roosevelt's friends from a government position. Taft believed he was correct in making the move, but Roosevelt and many other Republicans were furious. Some historians say they did not give Taft enough credit for the many reforms he did make. His government pursued a large number of antitrust suits against big businesses. It also advanced two constitutional amendments, one to establish a federal income tax and another to permit voters to elect senators directly. As the end of Taft's term in the White House came near, the Republican Party was divided. At their 1912 convention, a majority of delegates nominated Taft for president again, but a number left the meeting in anger. They created a new group called the Progressive Party and nominated as their candidate Theodore Roosevelt. Taft and Roosevelt, along with the Democratic Party candidate, fought a bitter campaign during 1912. Of the three, Taft came in last. Roosevelt came in second. The divided Republicans had given control of the White House to the Democratic candidate, Woodrow Wilson. Happily for him, Taft's story does not end there. Taft taught at Yale University Law School for a while. Then, when a Republican took the White House again, President Warren Harding appointed Taft as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He is the only person to lead both the executive and judicial branches of the U.S. government. Taft was clear about which one he favored. He was much more comfortable as a justice than he was as president. One journalist at the time described Chief Justice Taft as a smiling Buddha, placid, wise, gentle, sweet. He even lost weight. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.